Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everybody, welcome to Marriage and Martinis.
Hey guys, how are you?
This is weird. We have new microphones.
New mics.
Yeah,
we're
professional now. I hope we sound different.
We should do that thing from when Howard Stern's movie came out. His what was it called?
Private Parts.
Private Parts. When he like the woman is straddling the speaker.
Oh, the CM. What's it called? The Sibian.
No, not the Sibian.
The Sibian. Right?
No, he's like back in his old days. She's straddling the speaker and he's making noises in the mic. And he says, "Turn the bass all the way up."
I haven't seen that movie in so long.
Oh my god!
I know. I should watch it again. Movie. I know. You know, I feel like after he and Allison got divorced, it wasn't the same.
That was a long time ago.
Right, but the whole movie is, his whole thing is, the whole way through the movie is like, and I had Allison, and I had Allison,
right.
And she got me through
and
it
like
all.
And like he was the nice guy.
Yeah, and I'm misunderstood.
Right.
And I still love him, and I love him with Beth. But there's something about watching that movie now that I'm like, well, he's not with Allison anymore. So it takes on a different...
Yeah, make a new movie.
Make a new movie.
Howard, if you're listening.
Yeah, well, he won't listen because he doesn't love podcasts.
That's
he
true.
Always makes fun of them.
Well, he's old school medium. This
no,
is
but
new school.
I disagree with him because I think had podcasts been a thing when he was first starting, when no radio station would take him because he was too quote unquote vulgar, I think he would have been like, hell yeah, I'm going to start a podcast.
Well, that's what he did with Sirius.
Right. But,
yeah.
But once he had enough money to go to Sirius.
Right.
But back in the day, had podcasts been available, hell's yeah. I'm sure he would have been like, yeah, I'm going to start a podcast, say whatever I want with my own platform.
Right.
And be, you know what I mean? That, like,
well, now
to
he's
me,
too
makes,
big for, like, he's the anti-podcast
because he's worked
pushing,
to get where he is and he feels like it's too easy.
He's
to just
pushing
go and
radio.
Make a podcast.
Like, you have to work your ass off to get into radio, and he did, and he, you know, fought the battles and he won, and you know,
yeah, no,
anybody can make a podcast. I mean, look at us.
Oh, we're anybody.
Yeah, we are anyone.
No, I love him. I disagree with him on the podcast thing because I think that back in the day, that would have been exactly what he did. I think he would have, had it been an option, totally started his own podcast. So I think he needs to think of it from that perspective. Anyway, today we are talking to Amber, my friend from blogging. I've been blogging for about 2 years now and been following them.
Very good.
Since, thank you. Yeah. Yes. Oh, I did it.
It's tough.
From the beginning, they are non-binary, queer. Oh my God, it's so
she,
hard.
He,
they. No, I know. I know. I'm practicing. I'm really practicing.
That's tough.
I was in the car the other day with Mia, our 13-year-old, and I was telling her about the interview. Our kids are not usually allowed to listen to our podcast ever, but this. Mia is very into LGBTQ rights, and she researches, and we've gone to marches, and she just is, it's big with her. And when I was telling her about Amber, I kept using she, and Mia was getting so frustrated. She's like, Mom, it's they, them, it's not that difficult. So, yeah.
But it is.
It is difficult, and Mia is always educating me on things. Like, I just got her for Hanukkah for the first night. Her favorite band is Panic at the Disco, and I surprised her with Panic at the Disco tickets, and she's obsessed with Brendon Urie, who is the singer, and he is pansexual. Can you define pansexual?
I do know what pansexual is.
Okay. All right, let's hear it.
Pansexual is somebody who is okay with anyone, whatever their sexual desires are, whether it be a man, a woman, somebody who's gay, somebody who's not, somebody who's anything.
Good.
They're into anybody, anyone, no matter what.
Right. They right? don't. Yeah. And that's kind of cool because it sort of opens up your options a lot more. Like you can, if you're going to like anybody, then you have a lot more.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So yes, that is good. Pansexual is an umbrella term for, I think, that someone who will be with anybody.
Anyone, no matter what.
LGBTQ, straight, whomever. Right. They don't black
trans,
themselves
queer,
up.
Anything.
I just said that.
Oh.
That's covered by LGBTQ.
Right. Yeah. Well, I was just, if
my,
anybody doesn't
my
know.
Microphone thing is keeps going limp. Look, look.
Rub it.
It keeps falling, see? We have new microphones. It keeps falling. You need to fix mine.
All right.
You need to tighten it.
I bought the cheap ones.
Obviously. So she's obsessed with Brendon Urie, this singer.
And okay.
He's pansexual, but he's married to a woman, but he is pansexual.
He's a he. Okay.
Yes, he is a he. He identifies as a man. He's married to a woman, but even though he's married to a woman, if he left her, correct.
He would go with anybody.
Correct. Yes. And any of my younger fans out there, the show Younger, I think it's TV Lands now? I can't remember what it's on. Hillary Duff is on there. But one of the main characters, Nick Trerotola, I think his last name is, he is also, I don't know if he's gender fluid or, well, right. I got to do a little okay. bit more okay. research. Well, anyway, okay. but what I'm trying to say is a lot more people are starting to express themselves in these ways. And I think it's really cool. And Amber is here to educate us about it because we hear these terms and we kind of, I think, sometimes just skip over them without really trying to understand them. And it's important to take a moment and stop and really educate ourselves.
Well, yeah, I think that's really important because if somebody says to me, hey, my name is so-and-so, I prefer to be referred to as they. I would think to myself, like, okay, like, what, oh, right, all right, another
yeah,
thing
I knew you would get annoyed by that without really understanding it.
But when you listen to them talk,
mm-hmm.
you kind of get it. Mm-hmm. And, like, even if you don't get it, you respect it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the takeaway of this
whole
thing.
And guess what? We don't have to get it. It's not about us.
Right.
It's about them.
Exactly. Ooh, so that was like a double.
Ooh, that was good.
That was like a.
Write that down.
Like a singular them ooh, and a all of them.
I'm putting that on a t-shirt.
Yeah.
That was good.
That was good.
So I love Amber. I think they are fabulous.
Yeah.
And I hope you will too. Check her out at Family
out.
Rhetoric. Shit. I was so good. I was so close. I'm sorry, Amber. I was doing so well. Check them out at Family Rhetoric. RHETORIC. Adam and I had research how to spell that because neither of us knew how. And if you are interested in having her come and speak I was doing so well. Them at a school or a workplace or wherever. They are amazing and they are starting to do this all over and they are fabulous. So
they are.
Wait, I can't start the interview without giving you some serious props on the audio.
What?
Yes.
I get props?
You do get props.
Holy shit.
So this is our third interview. First one, audio was kind of a disaster. Second one, it was a semi-disaster. And this one was really good.
Not too bad.
You did great.
Yeah.
You did great. It only took a few beatings of me whipping you into shape to try to. No, it was great. You did great.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You did great.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. I'll buy you dinner tonight or something.
We should go out.
You always want. No, you want to go out now. I want to stay in. Nope. We're staying in.
All right. So
enjoy.
Just get in.
Get in.
Get in. All right. Enjoy, guys.
So it's so funny because when I was telling Adam about you, I was like, yeah, my friend Amber. And it's just so funny because we know each other through social media and through the bloggers world, but we've never met. Yeah. This is our first time speaking. Yet I feel like I know you and I feel kind of a connection to you, even though it's only been through the world of writing and photographs and, you know, that kind of stuff. So
and how nice is that, that we can build that community?
It is. It is. It's so cool. And I don't you feel like you've met so many awesome people through blogging?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I mean, and honestly, I was mentioning this to a friend the other day that I personally struggle sometimes with self-worth and that kind of imposter syndrome. And so it kind of hit me the other day that I'm like chatting with people throughout the day who I've actually admired for a really long time. And I'm like, all these people that I was like looking up to and like, oh, trying to like kind of not be on the radar necessarily as like a fan, but like on the radar as like a colleague, I am now. And I was really humbled by that. And I was really taken back by the fact that not only am I respected kind of in this writer's world and what I'm doing, but it's by people who I really respect. And how great is that? So yeah, these connections are amazing. And I love this community. I mean, as an artist and as a writer, and if nothing else through this administration, I'm seeing who my allies are more than anything. And that's been really valuable too. And a lot of my allies are you guys, the writers and the people who blog and who are willing to hear what I have to say through my writing when it comes to LGBTQ stuff. So I love it.
It's great. And I this is the first community I feel like I've been a part of that I feel like no one's competitive with each other. Everyone just supports one another. It's crazy.
I think it's also okay for us to be like, but we'll get it next time.
Yes, absolutely. So I was so excited to speak with you because I am very familiar with your writing. I read a lot of your articles. I have kind of followed you since the beginning of your blog. Because how long have you been doing it?
So I have been freelance writing for a long time. I started Family Rhetoric right around the same time I got sober. I needed, so I'm an alcoholic. I've been in recovery for 16, I don't know, July 23rd of last year. So July 23rd of this year was a full year. So whatever that
Congratulations.
Is.
Congratulations.
I don't even know. Thank you.
Yeah, good for you. That's great.
Thank you. It was a long time coming. But I really, so I've been writing for a long time and getting sober, is really kind of what pushed me to take, not only my writing more seriously, but also my advocacy more seriously. And in order to be a better advocate for myself and my kids, I started the public Facebook page. So I would have a place to do some microblogs. I'd have a place to share my writing with the sites I was writing for. And I would have a place to share articles specifically around, queer topics. So I think that's around the time that you, found me, but I've been writing for a very long time. It's just kind of been recently that things have taken off, and it's no coincidence that it has to do with, being sober. So, as hard as it is on some days, I do recognize what a blessing it is that I can do these things with clarity at this point.
That's great. And so now you're sort of taking things to another level. You're starting to speak publicly in bigger forums and everything, right? Is that kind of your next step, your next goal?
Yes, it is. Well, do you want to talk about a little bit about my family's background? Do you want me to talk about Ryan a little bit and kind of my motivation for this stuff? Or
sure, yeah. I was going to say, if you want to tell us a little bit about why you've decided that you need to kind of go broader and bigger and grow your advocacy and everything, if you want to do some of that, that'd be great.
So my name is Amber. I use they, them pronouns. So I'm non-binary. So our world is broken into the binary, which is on, off, male, female, yes, no, right? So that's the binary. It's one or the other. And so a lot of people run with the assumption that gender is binary. And I'm happy to talk about gender versus sex, not the like doggy style sex, but like the your body, uh-huh. Your body part sex. So basically gender is between the ears. So gender, how you identify as a male or female or neither or both. is in your brain. And your sex is based on what's between your legs. And oftentimes, I'm assuming Adam, now correct me if I'm wrong, I'm assuming Adam identifies as male and he was born as a penis. Mm-hmm. Yes. So you, Adam, you are cisgender. You are somebody whose sex and gender align with each other, and you're pretty confident in who you are, right?
Sure. Makes sense.
Yeah. So somebody who's transgender, their sexual parts don't line up with their gender identity. So I have a transgender daughter. She was assigned male at birth based on her sexual anatomy. When she was about 18 months, she started very adamantly preferring to wear her big sister's clothes, which I was fine with. Kind of like, yeah, let's see this little boy rock pink. I'm fine with that. So we just kind of watched this little kid gravitate towards skirts and dresses and all the things. And then she got a little older and would never say that she was a boy. And at one point when she was about two, said, I was reading a book to her and her twin brother. There was a picture on the inside of, it was from the library, and there's a silhouette of a girl and a boy, seemingly. And Ben pointed to the little boy and said, that's me. And Ryan pointed to the little girl and said, that's me. And so it was the first time she said, I'm a girl. So I took note of this because as a parent, you want to kind of follow your kid's lead. And I didn't want it to give her potentially language that for something that she wasn't feeling. Cause maybe just that day she's like, oh, maybe I want long hair, or maybe I want to be like my big sister, or maybe I like what that kid's playing with. I didn't want to ever feel like I had to give her a label. So for about 6 months, we started referring to Ryan as our big kid. We were very gender neutral with her to kind of see where this would take us. Like, did she feel like she had to be a girl in order to like clothing, even though she wasn't from this house that supported that? I mean, we're a two-mom house. We're a queer house. We have lots of queer friends. So our messages to her were never that she had to be a girl to like stereotypically girl things. So we watched and we waited and we listened, and she's already kind of an intense kid. But her anxiety was getting really high and her moods were not great. And finally we realized like she's intense, and she was telling us she's a girl. And finally my partner and I were like, you know what? Like, and we have trans friends and they're like, she is all the things that a transgender person is: consistent, insistent, and persistent across the board. And she had been for, I mean, almost a full year. And we, as parents, were just kind of like, oh, you know, cause so many people say, how can a kid know that they're, you know, a transgender from such a young age? Well, it's the same way that your cisgender little boy who was born as a penis can easily say, I'm a little boy. It's the same with my daughter who was born as a penis, who says, I'm a little girl. They know, kids know their gender right around three. It locks in right around that time. And, we knew she's going to be starting preschool the fall, about 6 months from that point, where she just really was adamant about being a girl. And we talked to our pediatrician and he said, ask her how she wants to start preschool. And if she says as a girl, you guys need to start switching pronouns and you need to, practice that and see how it feels for her and how it feels for you and prepare the preschool for this. And we did. And we saw an instant mood change. Like this kid, like it was like a rebirth for this kid. I mean, you just saw the happiness. It was easier. Her siblings relaxed because everybody was kind of like, you idiots. Like, of course she's a girl, you know, but, there's definitely a process of the transition for parents and the transition for kids. And so she has been living as her most authentic self, the May before she turned three. And so she'll be six in June. So, I mean, she's been rocking it. Doing her thing. She's still an intense firecracker, but so she's transgender.
And what was her birth name? What name did you give her at birth?
Well, so it was Ryan. I will say that a lot of people prefer you not to ask that question because a lot of older transgender people, some people, it depends on the person, you can ask that, but people often say the birth name they were given is their dead name, and it brings up a lot of negative feelings for them. Because not all transgender people have a smooth, supportive transition. And so they often like to kind of forget. And I'm not speaking for the entire transgender community, but it's not always, I personally wouldn't ask a transgender person what their birth name is because it's disrespectful. If they want to give you that information, they can. But to call a transgender person by their birth name is, it's called dead naming them, and it's very hurtful. So I'm okay that you asked me that question, but I would recommend that you not ask any other transgender people.
Right. Well, I was going to see, I was going to see how she got to Ryan. Did she choose that name or, you know, what? Because I know it could be a quote unquote boy's name or a girl's name. So I was just.
That was the name. So when they were in utero, Ben was the lowest one down. He was the first one in the chute. And he was super calm, super chill. And Ryan was above baby B. And she was nonstop. Their personalities are just like they are now in utero. And we're like, well, I picked Benjamin was the name I picked. And it just seemed like a chill name. And my partner really liked the name Ryan. I'm like, well, Ryan sounds like let's go do keggers, like kind of thing. And let's give the one who's flipping the name Ryan and let's give the chill one Ben. And it turned out that Benjamin is Ben and Ryan, our trans daughter, it kind of worked out nicely that her name is gender neutral. So yeah, she still has her first and middle name, and we never have given her the option to change it. I don't know that she wants to change it because her narrative as Ryan has always been a positive narrative. And for the most part, I think that plays a big part in a person choosing to change their name or not. So
can you give us a little background just to kind of rewind a little bit about your backstory and your, you know, how, when you decided to, I don't know if you came out or you just always identified as non-binary or what your, you know, your process and your experience was, but can you give us a little background about that and maybe how you met your partner just a little bit so we can kind of put it all in kind of perspective?
Sure. So I knew from a very, very young age that I hesitate to use the word different because sometimes people associate different with not okay. But the bottom line is I felt different as a little kid. I knew from a very young age that I wasn't 100% female. I just always kind of latched on to that tomboy identity. And I also knew that I really liked girls. So I'm like, well, I must be gay. Like this, I'm gay. I knew when I was five that I was gay. I was raised in a very religious, abusive home full of poverty and bigotry. So I also knew it wasn't safe to come out, and I held a lot of shame for a really long time. But I knew at a very early age that my heart loved differently than my straight girlfriends. Not girlfriends. I never had a girlfriend in high school. That would have been nice, but no. my friends who are girls. I had plenty of crushes in high school, but that's all another story.
So you kept it a secret.
I did. I kept it a secret for a really long time. I told a few friends my junior year of high school, maybe. I didn't really come out, until I went to college. I went to Penn State. So once I went there, I was like, oh, finally I can kind of be myself. And I started breaking away from my hometown even more. Even the friends who were also there, I just really kind of wanted to try to find my identity. And I'd always identify or always present myself as more masculine. Always felt more comfortable in, you know, stereotypical male clothing. You know, everything. I just felt more comfortable that way. And I always felt this struggle to kind of like, not a girl, not a boy. And I researched a lot, like, am I transgender? I'm like, that doesn't feel right. And I really never had the language. I just knew, you know, I just said, you know, I'm gay. And then several years ago, I'm like, you know what? I'm queer. I don't like the word lesbian. It's too gendered. Gay is also gendered, but it felt like it just kind of took away the fact that I feel both male and female. And I've written about it. And it wasn't until a few years ago that I heard the word non-binary. I'm like, ooh, yeah, like that feels right. And at the time, I was probably, it was right at the beginning of the peak of my alcoholism. I don't know if alcoholism can really have a peak or not. I mean, but it was real bad. My drinking was really bad. Also very secretive. And I was just putting a lot of reasons to not like myself, on top of reasons that I already didn't like myself. So with a lot of, dark feelings and shame. And I was also home full time with my twins and I was bored and I was lonely and I was just really in a really dark place. And it started to occur to me how much I hated my body. And this is a big thing too with, transgender people, and non-binary is under the transgender umbrella.
Can you define queer? I'm sorry, because we hear the word all the time.
Sure.
I was going to ask actually if that's, I thought that was more derogatory than like that. That wasn't an okay
I think it
word.
Was at one point, right? Was it at one point kind of?
Yeah, I think it depends on who's using it and how you're using it. I identify as queer because it encompasses how I fall in love. So with other female-identified, female-bodied people. And it also encompasses my my gender identity. So queer for me is my sexuality and my gender identity all in one. So it feels right to me. Sometimes people who... Queer is also, I think, a good way to not be erased. I know there are some, like maybe a gay or lesbian man or woman who then marry or date a transgender man or woman. So it looks like a heterosexual relationship when it's really not. And so like, let's say a cisgender lesbian is married to a transgender man. On the outside, it just looks like this heteronormative straight couple. But that erases their kind of their community of their queer community. And so sometimes they then would embrace that the word queer because it tells, you know, it's about representation and visibility, honestly, in some cases. And people often wonder, like, why do you have to label yourself? What does it matter? Well, it matters because there aren't equal rights and there's still hate crimes and there's still fear and there's still ignorance. So we have to keep using these labels in order for people to understand and see that we exist and we're here. And let's try to normalize these relationships before we can just kind of strip it away and say, oh, well, you're just a couple, because people don't see lesbian or gay couples, or, you know, some people, you know, a bisexual person may be in a, you know, a man female relationship, and that bisexual woman's like, hey, let's not forget the fact that I can also fall in love with a female. Like, that's, your identity is really important and you want people to see you. And so going back to me as non-binary, my drinking and my identity were very tightly linked, and I didn't realize how much until I got sober. And when I wasn't drinking, I still am very uncomfortable with my body. I've lost 30 pounds since stopped drinking, and I've been doing a ton of heated yoga and fitness. And so my body is slowly becoming more of my own. I still would like to do top surgery someday, which is having my breast removed. So there's definitely pieces of me that aren't there yet, but to just finally say, look, I am not binary. I'm not female. I'm not male. I am non-binary. It just feels really good. And anytime somebody uses a female pronoun on me, I cringe. Like it's like a physical reaction for me. I try to give people grace, because unless they know the preference that I want, they don't know. And so I try to be clear. I have a button that has they, them pronouns on it. So when I do my speaking engagements or come out at different places, people know to use those pronouns. And I do sometimes still get masculine male pronouns, which doesn't bother me as much as female pronouns, but it's still not quite right. But so being non-binary is, I think, the hardest thing for people to understand, but it's what feels most comfortable to me. And that's ultimately what matters most, because that's what's going to keep me happy and healthy and sober. So I'm trying to be patient with the people in my life who are trying to embrace this. So I've known kind of this about myself for a really long time, and honestly, I drank it away. And it has only been a few months. I made an announcement around coming out day, this October, and just said, "Hey, this is who I am." And a lot of people were like, "Well, no shit. Like, of course you're non-binary, you fucking idiot. Like, why did it take you so long, like, to finally like embrace this? Like, we see you."
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
And some people are like, "Oh, I don't know what to do with this. I'm confused." And some people have just taken it in stride. And I've been really humbled by, and like you said, this writing community, by the number of people who I haven't met in real life who are just so supportive. And mostly they're the ones who have been like, "Yeah, no kidding." like we see you, like we know you, like through your writing, like you've been talking about this stuff. And of course, it's who you are. So yeah, I don't know if your readers or your listeners will see me, but I do present as masculine. And I don't know if androgynous is the right word, Danielle, to describe me. But I definitely have feminine features, but I think I present more masculine. At least that's how I would like people to see me. But
right. So do you think about changing your name at all or no? Because it is a very female name, feminine. Mm-hmm.
Wait, before you answer that, until we transition to that. So you said you were talking about wanting to get surgery. Is that because you identify more physically as a man? Is that what that's about? Maybe I'm just a little tongue-tied, but
no, that's a great question. No, that's for sure. I think physically I would like to have more of a masculine body. I have never liked my breasts.
Like, it makes sense to me more when if somebody who's a woman really is a man inside, and then they want nothing to do with female parts and all, but that's kind of different than your situation. Not situation. I didn't mean to say that. You're the way.
No.
You feel. So I'm just wondering what the surgery, is for, like, because you don't identify either way. So I'm just a little confused on that.
No, that doesn't make sense. I'm totally a hybrid. I'm going to keep the vagina. I'm going to get rid of the breast. So, and I can be totally candid. I mean, I do sometimes feel like there's a penis missing, which is a weird phantom feeling. For the most part, I'm fine with what I have. And I'm not motivated to take testosterone or to have like a beard or, kind of body hair. Sorry, Adam, I don't know how much body hair you have, but I'm just kind of not into the body hair.
He has a lot.
That's not true.
So, I don't need, to grow a beard, and I don't, I really would like to get over my breasts because they are a very feminine piece of me, and I wish my hips were not, my hips aren't that curvy. They're curvier than I would like. But at a certain point, I think I'm always going to find something that I wish I could change. So I'm doing my best to accept my body for how it is. And
well, I think that has to do with just being a woman or a human being. I think just in general, I think just women, men, whomever, we're never satisfied. You know what I mean? So I think in some ways we can all understand that, but obviously it's from a different place, I guess. So I get that feeling of wishing things were different for sure. But so I was asking about your name and what you
So Years and years ago, I actually considered changing my name before I had kids. My partner and I moved to Warren, Vermont in 2001. I think she came up, and then maybe I was 2002. I don't know. Anyhow, because of my history of abuse, I kind of wanted to shed some layers. Like, I kept giving myself physical distance from my hometown and cutting family members out of my life who were just toxic and not healthy for me. And because of, I think, wanting to kind of shed that, and also without really realizing how, like, I've been on this path to kind of be this, and I hate to say B because I've always been non-binary, but I've been on this path to finally owning this label for a long time. And I think that initial wanting to change my name a while ago was also in part of that, to kind of get rid of that feminine piece of me. But I really like my initials, which are ADL. I like how they look for some reason. And so I wanted to keep my initials. And I looked through different A names, and I just honestly, I never did. I still think about it sometimes, changing my name, because it's so attached to my writing now as a professional. I'd be like, ugh. I mean, I've seen other people do it, and they've, you know, it's one thing to change my bio and change pronouns, but another thing to like go back and change my name on the thousands of articles I have written. I just, part of it's a convenient thing. And part of it is, of all the things I have to potentially worry about, I am okay now actually saying my name is Amber. I use they, them pronouns, because then I can indicate to people that, yes, I have a feminine name, but I'm not a female, if that makes any sense.
Do you ever say you prefer they, them, and people are like, no, I'm not doing that? Or do people, no. Do you ever get where people look at you like, that makes no sense?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I do.
Well, what's your response to that? Because, I mean, it's a very different thing that people, you know, I never heard of this before. You know, Danielle introduced me to, you know, well, not introduced me to you, but I never heard of it. You know, I'm sure most people never heard of it. So it's very, sure, I guess, confusing, or for somebody in our position to try to understand it at first. So if you said, please refer to me as they, it's more like, what? You know, what?
Sure.
What
you- I think most of the response, so two things. So I deal with a lot of people online. I haven't had anybody in person specifically say, wow, I'm not using that. Well, okay. Well, the people in my life, in real life, who struggle to use it have admitted to saying, we're just still struggling to change, and we're still struggling to, yes, wrap our head around the idea of being non-binary, and we don't totally understand it. So I won't say that it's been a blatant, I'm trying to tread lightly here because I want to be respectful myself and for other people. I recognize that this is a hard concept for people to wrap their head around. I do. I think for the most part, the reaction I've received from people is, we want to support you. We're trying, give us time. And for the most part, I surround myself with people and in the communities and where I speak who already know what they, them means. So it's pretty easy. Like, I spoke at the University of Vermont Translating Identity Conference, and that was 1,100, you know, transgender, non-binary, and or family members who love these people there. So I was basically like preaching to the choir. So to say, you know, my name is Amber, I use they, them pronouns, it was like no big shake. Depending on, you know, people who I talk to, you know, it's harder for them to understand. And the biggest thing that I see is, well, how can, you know, I use they when that's for plural? Well, if you think about it, we've been using they to refer to one person in the writing world for a very long time, or even in the written world or the spoken world. So, like, for example, if you were to go to the park and you see somebody's wallet on the bench, before you even pick it up, you would hopefully say, huh, somebody left their wallet here. I wonder if they know they forgot their wallet. So before you even go and look at the wallet, you may have already said they, or maybe you open the wallet and there's no ID. You're like, oh man, I wonder if they knew they had $100 in this wallet. You know, like you don't know if it's, you wouldn't say, I wonder if he or she knows where their wallet is. Or her, his or her wallet. Like just, we have always used they, them in the singular form. But when people like me ask you to refer to me that way, when you think you should be using she, her, or even he, him pronouns, that's when people are like, whoa, we can't do that. Mm-hmm. That's for the plural. When it's like, well, actually you've been using the singular term your whole life. In these ways. Does this make sense? Am I making sense?
Yeah, totally. That actually makes a lot more sense with the way you just described it.
And it's also so funny because it's sort of like, why does anybody care? You know what I mean? Why not just do it? You know what I mean? That's like, why not just do it because you're because Amber is a human being and you want that human being to feel comfortable in this world. And as another human being on the planet, like if you can sort of do that for them, then why not do it?
I think you're like even thinking too hard about it. Like if somebody said that to me, I wouldn't even get past the thought and be like, all right, fine, whatever.
Well, no, but you'd want to know why.
Okay, sure. But because I'd be curious, but not like who cares? Like if somebody wants to be called whatever they want.
Right.
Like, so what?
Right.
Like, why do I?
Well, that's kind of the whole thing. But I guess that's not everybody thinks like that.
Right.
And I think too, like my daughter, my oldest, she'll be 8 in February. My kids are working on it. And it's honestly, they usually just scream my first name because they're kind of dicks and they don't.
Do they call you mom?
I mean, they're just like, well, yeah, they call me mama, mommy. They just scream Amber because they need their ass wiped or something, or they're just mad. I don't know. So yeah, they refer to me as mama. And I've actually, that word is very important to me. Because somebody asked if I was going to change, like I probably will refer to myself as a parent or a mama. In my writing, I tend to use, even in any of my writing, the word parent. I don't know. Don't go look this up. Don't fact check me. But just because, and we can talk later about language, I try to use as inclusive language as I possibly can when I speak and when I write, excuse me. So my kids still call me mom, mama, and they're slowly getting used to the they, them pronouns. And there are actually there are a couple of really great children's books around this, and I've read them to them, and it makes sense. My daughter, though, at first was like, how can I call you they, because that's two people. Like, and I talked to her a little bit about, you know, what we talked about. But I said, honestly, if you think about it, they is male and female, and I feel both male and female. Mm-hmm. So when you look at me, I'm both. And she goes, oh, okay, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So for her, I went ahead and gave her the plural to refer to me as once, because I said, I do feel both masculine and feminine. And so it's okay for you to put a plural word, you know, attached to me as one person. And that made sense. So for now, I think they're totally on board. And it's funny because my transgender daughter, when I said, you know, guys, and they've always known I feel both male and female. It's just been, like I said recently, that I've been asking for the switch of the pronouns. And my transgender daughter, of everybody in the house, is like, well, yeah, of course. Like, duh, you know, because she's very observant and she knows. And yeah, she's very intuitive, that one. And I am as well. So the two of us both bump heads and kind of think the same way. And anyhow, there's an interesting bond between the two of us. but yeah, she definitely is me, and everybody in the house is working to switch pronouns. Some people in real life do a better job, and some people online do a better job. But I am trying to be patient while still feeling respected and seen, and sometimes the two don't meet. So it can be challenging for sure.
Question.
Go ahead.
Sorry.
No, sure. Go.
I don't, if you can even, you know, articulate this, I don't know how, what you say, you kind of feel both male and female. kind of at the same time. What does that mean? How can you feel, like, in what ways is it, like, some physically, some mentally, both and both? Like, what makes you feel masculine? What makes you feel feminine? Is that right question? You know what I'm trying to say?
Sure. Yeah. Like, in what ways do you identify as male and what ways do you identify as female? Yeah,
that's an easier way to say
it. Well, and I guess I can ask you the same question, right? Like, what makes you identify as male?
Well,
and is it
I guess
your body? Is it the messages you get from media and what it means to be a male? You know what I mean? Like, so I'm not trying to avoid the question. I'm just literally trying to make you think the same thing.
Sure. Because I hadn't. Because I guess 100% of what I know of myself is male. So I'm trying to feel like if there was a percentage of, you know, of myself that I felt female, like what would those be like to separate? I don't know. I can't, I'm having trouble. Like,
and I can't either. No, honestly, Adam, well, I can't either.
That's why I said at the beginning, you might not be able to answer this, you know, because it was just something that popped into my head and I can't obviously even do it for myself. So I can understand if you can either.
I think it goes back to how does a kid know if they're a boy or a girl? And is that a trans kid, a cisgender kid? And if you want to talk about intersex kids, do you guys know anything about intersex?
I don't.
It's okay if you don't. So the intersex community, if a kiddo is born with sexual anatomy that cannot be determined to be either male or female, in the past, and it is actually a human rights violation, doctors would make up their mind what genitalia they were going to construct for this child. They were going to base this kid's gender on whatever surgery they do. Oftentimes they got it wrong. And it would then be a child who was constructed a penis is actually female. And if they had done a little research, they would have seen internally that this kiddo actually had a uterus. So it's when you know, the external body parts cannot be determined to be sexually male or female, and or those may not line up with the internal sex organs.
They would do surgery like that before checking out the whole inside of the baby? That's insane.
It is insane.
I can't, wow.
Does that still happen or now that's
no. So now there's definitely a movement towards not, and I'm sure there still are surgeries happening. But for the most part, the rule of thumb is just as long as the child can do what they need, are healthy and can go to the bathroom and do they need to do, let's see how this kid develops. Let's let them tell us what their gender is because they're going to know. And then if they feel like their body someday needs to change to for whatever reason, then that's a conversation they can have at a later point with their family or their physician or whatever. But let's let this kid grow into themselves without somebody on the outside making a determination of how they should identify based on their sexual anatomy. So,
I guess it's hard because as a parent, the first thing when your child is born, it especially, you know, now a lot of people want to be surprised and everything, is it a boy or a girl? So,
right.
You know what I mean? That's the first thing that you say. I mean, is it healthy? Does it have 10 fingers and 10 toes? And is it a boy or a girl? And so like to have a baby come out and not, I mean, I can see as a parent where that would sort of be like, oh shit. Like that. All right. Now that was not on my agenda. You know what I mean?
Sure.
That would be, and then you're sitting there like, all right, so and everybody asks, what would she have? Did she have a boy or a girl or what, you know, what? And then, so that's a really hard concept.
I think for the most part, families decide, you know, they can decide, you know, what at that point, you know, are we going to say male or female? What is my baby? But I think And my hope is that with an open mind that this might change, because I think more doctors are aware of what it means to be intersex and knowing that those, you know, the sex organs and sexual anatomy and, you know, the mosaic genes of having both male and female DNA will then potentially be different than what the kiddo's brain is telling them. So hopefully there are those doctors who are informing parents of this and say, look, let's say it's a boy, but please keep in mind that this kid might come back and say, no, I'm not. And hopefully that transition for that kiddo will be easier because of the parents' knowledge and the open-mindedness of their family, and that this kid is going to be who they are, and we need to support and accept that.
And so, and you said you live in Vermont, and I've just, I'm wondering, like, cause you were, you said you're originally from the Midwest. Was that, was it something about Vermont? Was there a certain community that you wanted to move to because you knew that there, it was like a more progressive or accepting community? Or, I mean, cause it seems like where you live is, a pretty accepting place. Is that correct?
Yeah. So we, my partner and I moved to Vermont. My partner is a year older than I am and graduated 6 months before I did and was recruited by IBM when IBM was doing really, really well.
So and your partner went to Penn State also?
Yes. Yep. Okay. We met at Penn State. Uh-huh. She was recruited by IBM at three different locations. One was in, Poughkeepsie, New York. And one was in Raleigh, North Carolina. Another one was in Burlington, Vermont. And I'm like, I don't really want to live in a strip mall. Nothing against Poughkeepsie, but I don't know. It just didn't feel right to me. Raleigh definitely did not feel progressive enough. We knew even, I mean, this was 20 years ago, like that wasn't going to be a safe space for us. And they wooed her up here on Church Street at Christmas time with the lights and the lake and the whole bit. And she's like, oh my gosh, we have to move to Burlington. And we knew they were more progressive, but just the beauty of the state, and it just has a different feel, than other places. It really is like this weird magical place. It's, I don't know. So for the most part, yes, it is more progressive. There is still a ton of work to be done, but at least here people want to do the work, I'd say, for the most part. It depends on what part of the state you're in, of how accepting people can be, but definitely there, I feel very supported in the community that we're in. And Vermont was the first state to have civil union. So before marriage, gay marriage was legal, through the United States government, states had, civil unions in which allowed, same sex couples to be unioned. I mean, not married because we weren't recognized by, the federal government, but at least by way of the state of Vermont, we could get civil union, which meant all employers had to recognize same-sex couples the way they would married couples. Slowly, states started pushing for marriage. They started calling it marriage. And Vermont then in 2010, or no, we were married in 2001. Fuck. Yeah. Or no, we were somebody. Yeah, no, we were civil union 90210. No, we were civil union September 2nd, 2001, because it was 090201. We're like, oh, it's so close to 90210.
Oh, that's so funny.
And the idea of each state becoming, saying marriage, it was all marching toward hopefully getting the federal government to recognize marriage. So my partner was pregnant with our first kiddo when marriage was legalized in Vermont. So we sat around a table with some friends who, one of them was a JP, and we signed marriage license there. So we had a civil union, a marriage license, and then in June of 2015, the case at the Supreme Court was passed, and same-sex marriage was legal across the United States. That still doesn't feel safe to me. I feel like that could be overturned at some point. It is recognized, and I definitely have technically the same rights you do, but because of the discrimination that I still am, could potentially face, I went ahead and did second parent adoption for all three of my kiddos. So I'm not biologically my kid's parent. My partner carried all three of our kids. So depending on where we travel to, and before same-sex marriage was legal across the country, depending where we travel to within the United States, I would be considered a stranger to my kids.
All that keeps coming to my head is, do you watch Handmaid's Tale?
I watched the first season. I've been so crazy busy that I haven't watched the second.
Maybe don't watch the second season.
I probably shouldn't. No.
Oh, yeah. There's an awful, awful scene. And for anybody out there who watches The Handmaid's Tale, and that's all that keeps coming to my head. But it's so funny. You and I have something in, well, not something in common, but we know somebody in common. So you're... maybe you should explain it, because I'm going to like butcher the all the...
Yeah, who knew that we would be talking about sperm and vagina and breast removal? This is so fun.
Yeah. But so, yes, yeah, so your kids were... So it was a sperm donor.
Yeah, so we used... I can explain. I mean, this could be fun. You could explain it to me if you want.
Oh, God, I don't know if I could. I could try.
So, yeah. So we used a reputable cryobank to shop for frozen sperm. And we used an anonymous donor, which means we don't know who he is. But we also used an anonymous open donor, meaning that our donor, when our kids turn 18, is willing to meet them, because we thought it was important that our kids someday, if they want to meet their biological father, we don't say that they have a dad, and they know they don't have a dad, but when it comes down to science, they do have a biological father, and if they want to meet him and or have a relationship with someday, we wanted to give them that opportunity, because I had a really shitty relationship with my father. My partner had a really good one with hers. He's still around. He's alive. She still does. I haven't talked to my dad in about 15 years. So we wanted them to have an opportunity to have a connection with somebody in their life if they wanted to. If they never want to meet him, that's fine. But we didn't want to take that opportunity away. And I'm not saying some people choose to have a closed donor, and their kids would, if they want to meet their donor, if they could do research and there's registries for that. And there's, you know, basically we wanted to give our kids the opportunity to have any questions answered that may come up someday. So we chose a donor who...
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. So we chose a donor who was willing to meet the kids someday, and the cryobank will set up that initial meeting. And then if the two of them want to continue that relationship, then they can. And I have friends who, also have that situation. And I know a really wonderful woman through the Family Equality Council who knows her biological father and has a great relationship with him. And so I've kind of seen all different angles of this, and it just still feels really right that they have that option someday. So, but another option that the kiddos have through the cryobank, there is a sibling registry. So anybody who used the same sperm donor, and you know him by his ID number, you can go to the registry and list how many kiddos you have. So you have to, so when you're pregnant, you have to announce that you have a pregnancy via this donor. It tells other people who've used this donor if you've had a pregnancy. It's a way of keeping track. But you can also tell the other families who use the same donor, you know, what, and we'll keep it binary here, if you had a boy or a girl, and you know, when they were born, and if you want to list your contact information, you are welcome to do that. So I was pretty hesitant to do this, honestly, because as a non-bio parent, I was being a little insecure just about, like, I wanted to make sure I was forming a bond with my daughter. And this was almost 8 years ago. I don't know if I want other people in our family. I don't know if I want these outsiders, you know. I don't know if I want kids who actually are strangers or are more biologically connected to my kid than me to be in my life and their parents. And So my partner was curious. I was like, oh, let's just find out. And so we looked on the donor register, the sibling registry page, and we saw that this couple had listed, they just had had twins by the same donor that we used. And they used the language, Molly said something about my partner and I or something. So like, oh, is it two women? Is it a male and female? Like, but she purposely put this information in there in a non, gendered way, because knowing that a lot of lesbians use cryobanks, she didn't want to kind of turn off anybody if she said my husband and I use or have twins, because her husband is transgender and that's why they needed to use the sperm.
So, and Molly and I went to high school together.
High school, yes.
So it's so funny somehow we figured out she and I went to the same high school. It was crazy that, you know, that just small world, but so that's just so when I see pictures of you guys together, because you guys kind of all hang out, right? You kind of like they all know they're sort of siblings, is that correct?
Oh, they know they're siblings. They know, they call each other brother and sister. They love and fight like brothers and sisters. They have similar quirks, and they look alike. So we quickly developed a wonderful relationship with them. And we met for the first time when our kiddos were right around 18 months. We met in person. And then ever since then, we try to see each other 2 to 3 times a year. And so then it was, you know, they have twins and we have a singleton. And then we had twins and they had a singleton. So there's a total of 6 kiddos between the two families at this point. And it's loud and noisy and we were bummed. Normally we spend Thanksgiving with them and this is the first year and a few that we didn't get to. So we really miss seeing them, but yeah, we Skype, and I mean, they're family and they just,
it's
all the kids are brothers and sisters.
Yeah, I think
and
that is so cool. Very cool.
So yeah. And Ethan, her husband, has been a huge resource to us, being a transgender man and, just helping us, navigate some of this stuff to get his perspective. You know, like we wanted as parents to do the right thing and kind of looking to him to be like, you know, what would you have wanted, you know, as a kid, and just kind of like, I don't know. He's just a wonderful human being in general. And Molly is too. So they've just been great support. And, so there, it's pretty cool, you know, and looking back, I'm like, why wouldn't I have wanted all this love in my life? Well, because it was new and it was scary. And, you know, who knew that it could have been so great. And the crazy thing is they were living in California at the time. Molly and Ethan were, when we connected, he was, I think, still doing some type of schooling. He actually went to UVM and was living in Burlington the same time my partner and I were living in Burlington, and we had never met. So he was floating around the same parts, probably went to the same gay bar we did. He actually started the trans identity conference that I actually spoke at this year when he was at UVM. And it was just this whole serendipitous thing. Like, it's like we've been meant to be connected somehow. And
that's really cool.
Yeah. So.
Well, so one thing I want to talk about, is how you can, like, how can we better help our kids be more understanding, accepting, tolerant of anybody who they meet or, that is non-binary or, you know, in the LGBTQ community, because Adam and I, you know, we're raising 3 kids, and I think that we're doing a pretty good job of raising kids who are aware and open, and but it's always still a struggle for us just because we aren't as well informed as you are, or, you know, some of the people in the community are. So what would you tell us to do to make sure that we are raising the most, you know, tolerant human beings we possibly can?
Well, a couple things. So I'm an advocate, I'm an educator. I work a lot in the schools, specifically. And I will tell you that kids are already pretty accepting and they are already pretty open to this stuff. I think you hit the nail on the head of saying it's the parents who aren't quite sure how to do it. And I'm finding up here that parents want to be able to talk to their kids about stuff and they just aren't sure how to have the conversations. And I think the most important thing as parents is that we have these conversations at a very early age. And educators need to have these conversations at a very early age. I think sometimes educators hear LGBTQ and they sexualize it. And the same thing with the transgender bathrooms. People sadly still equate homosexuality, being transgender, with pedophilia. And it's just so far from the truth. But that's kind of the stigma that I have to break down a lot of times first. And so when I say I want to come into my kid's preschool, I mean, my kid's preschool classroom was totally dope and I didn't have a problem. But let's say, you know, a parent said, I want my kids to read I Am Jazz. It's a book about Jazz Jennings, a transgender woman who from a very young age knew she was trans. And this book is written for preschool to age whatever. It's written in very gentle language and easy to understand language for preschoolers, because preschoolers, they like, I don't teach my kids what it means to be cisgender, right? Straight. Because it's the normal. It's what everybody equates as the bar of which everything's set up against, you know, straight, masculine presenting men, feminine presenting females. This is the heteronormative, and anything that's not that is seen as different and weird and not okay. And so from an early age, if we can start breaking down that bias and show kids that, well, actually there are people who are transgender and there are people who have two moms or two dads, then those things become normal at a very early age and those become part of everyday conversation. So my recommendation is find LGBTQ kids books, young adult books, books for teens, books for adults that aren't just instructional, like how do I better understand these things, but actually just are like characters in a story. And there are more and more books that, I mean, but back in the day it used to be just Heather Has Two Mommies. And it was basically like, Heather has two moms and we should like her because she's the same as us. And it was just a very like educational, I mean, it was groundbreaking at the time. Don't get me wrong.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
I say books are huge. And that's what I tell educators and that's what I tell parents. The sooner you can get a book in your kids' hands that represent all types of families, all types of people, and this is across the board. It's race, it's religion, it's poverty. It's like our kids need to be aware that the world is not just what they see in their household. And if we can better represent queer people, then those conversations are going to happen. And you're already setting a tone in your house saying, you know, because I always say your kids shouldn't have to come out to you. I mean, they still do and they will because that's our world. And for a long time, that's the way it's going to be because they're going to feel like they have to come out because being in love with somebody of the same gender is still not okay, unfortunately. But if you are raising your kid in a house that you're reading these books and showing these movies and cartoons and just kind of celebrating these people or openly talking about, you know, your friends who, you know, oh, so-and-so's moms, you know, kind of thing. When you normalize it in your house, then your kid slowly realizes that, oh, this is normal. And if I'm feeling this, that's a normal feeling because in my house, I've been taught that it's normal. So I still may feel nervous coming out to my mom and dad because it's probably not what they expect me to be, because you probably, you as parents have even said to either your son or daughter, like, oh, you know, your boyfriend, girlfriend someday, you know, like we may have already, you know, we have these biases and we'll say, you know, things that are heterosexual or, you know, instead of somebody saying like, oh, he's going to make somebody a good husband or wife someday, we say, oh, he's going to make somebody a good husband someday, referring to his wife. So it's the language that we use around our kids that we can also let them know that they're going to be supportive however they fall in love with them.
Or even like if they're playing with a girl, and I think I'm sure I have been, you know, guilty of this, and I know so many people are, that, you know, is that your girlfriend? Is that, you know what I mean? That kind of thing is, I think, still huge. And we do that all the time. Oh, do you have a crush on her? Or so we automatically are assuming that they are, you know, heteronormative.
Yeah. Well, and so there's sexuality, and there's also gender expression. So no matter how you fall in love, no matter what your sexuality is, we express ourselves in lots of different ways. And I think what's even more important at such an early age is to let our little girls or little boys, I'm just going to use the binary for now, express themselves in a way that go against that norm and allow kids to be gender nonconforming and bust those stereotypes. Because when a kid comes out later in life, they might be made fun of for being gay, but they're probably made fun of because, you know, Sam, who is a flamboyant gay teenage boy, you know, might like to paint his fingernails. And so from a very early age, boys are told, oh, boys can't paint their fingernails, and they're made fun of on their gender expression. Or boys can't wear pink, or you can't wear those boots, there's sparkles in it, because only girls can wear that stuff. And so if we can, from a very early age, allow our boys and girls to explore all types of roles, all types of colors, dress, like, for some reason, parents get so worked up about, like, if our kids deviate from what they expect to be male or female. And that starts with those fucking gender reveal parties. Like,
I read your article about that. I thought that was a really interesting article.
I almost mentioned that before, actually. And that's like the biggest thing today.
Yeah. I mean, and Adam owns a party store. And I think that's like a huge business for you, huge. Right?
Gender reveal has grown in the last year bigger than most categories in the store. I mean, it's a huge every single weekend thing.
I mean, if nothing else, be like, yay, we're having a penis party. I mean, because that's really all you're announcing. You're not announcing your kid's gender. I mean, you might be. And people are like, well, why is it such a big deal? We're having fun. I'm like, well, then just have a fucking baby shower. Like, why do we need to, like, light stuff on fire and associate, like, pink and blue and all the things with what's between your kid's legs? Like, you're already setting your kid up with these stereotypes, whether you think you are or not. I could go on. I won't.
It's hard. I see both sides, because I also get the excitement of it, and I get it's hard. But of course, when you say it the way you say it, I completely understand that perspective also. So it's so hard because, you know, we are caught between these worlds of what we're used to and what we're trying to get to, and letting go sometimes of these practices is really hard.
Yeah.
I think they're just, you know,
can I give you an example? Okay. Oh, go ahead, Adam.
Okay. Adding to what Danielle was saying, where it's just like another celebration, another reason, you know, we're looking for new reasons to celebrate, and, you know, and what these gender reveals are, which, you know, people are excited. It's a boy, it's a girl. And I guess it's still, nobody thinks about this other side of the coin where there's, you know, maybe it's not, you know, maybe it's, we're celebrating for the wrong reason, but I guess because it's typical that it's either a boy or a girl. I mean, it's celebrated. Yeah. So, I mean, like you were saying, it's both
hard.
Sides.
It's hard,
you know, because it's a fun thing to do, but you're not thinking about people who can't, or, you know, feel differently about it.
Yes. And I definitely see that. I think, to me, it just looks like ignorance because people are confusing gender and sex, but you're right. For the most part, that sex will match up with the gender that you're celebrating. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to lie. I wanted to know what was between my kids' legs. Like, I have OCD and I kind of wanted to know what I was going to, you know, and I thought too, when my twins, I thought two penises, I'm like, oh, I'm having two boys. But I also, you know, coming at it from a very different non-heteronormative reality as a parent, it was hard to have to watch my kid kind of struggle and they'll be like, okay, but this is the path we're on. But I always knew, I guess, it was a possibility. And my fear is with the overdoing of the gender reveal parties that people won't have go ahead, have a party and say, we're having a girl. But I hope it also comes with, we're having a girl, unless they tell us otherwise, and we're okay with that too.
Right. You know? Right. So, I like that. Yeah, I like that. Then that's a great way to spin it, definitely, knowing that that might not be the case.
Right, because, I mean, I think, so gender can be very validating, and pronouns are very validating. Another way that I talk a lot about in classrooms and with parents is, the way, the language we use. I will never say, hi, boys and girls. I will say, hi, friends, hey, dudes, hey, team, hey, first graders. There's a bazillion ways to say hello without gendering someone. Certain language, instead of saying fireman, I say firefighter or police officer or mail carrier, server. There's a way to speak everyday things to say the same thing, but in a non-gendered way. So I think if we can do that with our kids from a very early age, I think it takes away some of that feeling like you have to be either a boy or girl to do certain roles, and or you have to be either a boy or girl to feel like you fit into society. A lot of people aren't aware of these implicit biases that we have. And it, again, can be, you know, when it comes to race or poverty or religion, anything that kind of rubs us kind of against what we know to be our truth and what we know to understand feels a little scary. And whether we know it or not, we kind of make a face, or we walk to the other side of the street, or we're like, I can't do that. That just doesn't make any sense. I'm uncomfortable. I talk a lot about what a privilege it is to choose when you want to be comfortable or not. I am rarely comfortable, and it's something I embrace in some regards. It's something that is exhausting. So when I hear somebody say, well, these topics are really hard, I'm really uncomfortable, I say, well, that's a lovely choice to choose not to talk about this stuff to make sure my kid feels included in your classroom, because if she doesn't feel comfortable, she may kill herself one day. She may die by suicide. So let's be honest. So for people to say when they want to be comfortable or not, that's a big red flag for me. And so I think I encourage parents to be uncomfortable, to kind of live in this space of making mistakes, like we talked about at the beginning, and being vulnerable and kind of challenging what we show our kids on a day-to-day basis. I went in to read a book called Pride, the Harvey Milk story. It was the story behind Harvey Milk, the first gay elected official out in San Francisco many moons ago. And did I just say many moons? Anyhow. and he was assassinated. And I probably shouldn't have said many moons. Anyhow, so he was assassinated. But before he was killed, he and a friend came up with a rainbow flag and why that was so important to Pride, and it was something to rally behind. And I talked to second graders about this stuff and talked about what it means to be gay. And one of the pictures in the book were two men, Harvey Milk and his boyfriend. And it's this really beautifully illustrated book. And it's, again, meant for, I think, first to fourth graders. I mean, it's reading books for the appropriate age. I mean, sometimes people think we shouldn't have these conversations with kids, and we should. There are these beautiful books that tell us we should. So there are these two men on this tandem bike, and it's this lovely picture. And I saw a little girl make a face, like this, ew, that's gross kind of face. And so I stopped and I said, I see you making a face. Is it because there are two people in love? Because, ew, you're in second grade and yeah, like that, whatever. You don't need to deal with that right now. Or is it because it's two men in love? And she goes, it's two men in love. And I said, yeah, that feels weird to you, because you don't get to see that very often, do you? And she goes, no, I've never seen that before. And so we need to not shame our kids when they don't understand something that we want them to understand. Like, it's the same when, you know, I'm often asked, are you a boy or a girl? And parents are like, shh, 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 don't ask that. Because then you make the kid feel bad for even asking the question. When I'd rather have a conversation and normalize something to them than shushing them and making them feel bad they ask the question. So I embrace the fact that she's like, because it's not her fault she's never seen two men in love. And so as parents, my hope is when we see kids kind of struggle with something or ask questions that you think might be offensive, to actually kind of see where the conversation goes. Because really beautiful things can come about. And so we talked about it and I said, you're right. Books that you see, cartoons, movies you see, you don't get to see two men or two women in love very often, do you? And she's like, I don't. And she's like, I would like to. And I said, well, yeah, like, cause love is love. And my daughter's in her class. I'm like, and yeah, she, you know, Eva has two moms and you guys like me. And so I am constantly in my kid's school to represent my family, other queer families, and just to give these kids a face of representation for what the community looks like. I mean, I'm kind of a unicorn as far as the queer community goes. I mean, just through my looks and being non-binary, I'm kind of as queer as it gets. But the kids know me for me. And because I'm providing that representation, I'm normalizing this stuff for them. And so parents can do the same thing by embracing some of these conversations that feel uncomfortable and by allowing your kids to kind of fumble through stuff too, because that's when we're going to learn and we're going to be okay with some of these topics.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that makes sense, but
no, definitely. I think normalizing it is the, you know, is really important. Actually, if you, I'm going to get some of those book titles from you and maybe we can put them on our website as well. Just, you know, so that people can just maybe click through, you know, the link to get them if they'd like. Can you tell everybody how to get in touch with you and what it is you do? And if somebody is looking for a speaker or this sounds appealing, is something that they want to bring to their community or their schools or wherever, can you just give a little bit of an idea of what you bring to the table when you do a presentation and a little bit about how anyone can get in touch with you?
Sure. Yeah, I have a website. It's just amberleventree.com. And
we'll link to that as well from ours.
Awesome. Thank you. So I advertise myself as a writer and as an advocate and as a speaker. And I'm queer doing all of these things. And my mission is to create a more LGBTQ inclusive world, specifically learning and workspaces. And I want to help people be aware of their biases, mostly their heteronormative biases, because I think if we can kind of better understand the way we think, we can kind of see how maybe we aren't being as inclusive as we would like to be. And so we can hopefully understand the queer community better, which leads to normalization, which leads to acceptance, which leads to less bullying, less depression in our youth, and hopefully less suicide by kids who don't feel like they have a place in this world when they absolutely do. So I have a big mission, and I have a lot of allies who want to be better allies. And so I speak at different places, rec centers, the schools, conferences. Danielle, I was recently selected to speak at Mom 2.0.
Hey, that's great.
Yes. So I am going to talk about the importance of being LGBTQ inclusive in basically the writing world, but the value that it actually adds to your business by being inclusive. There was a study done that these experts were given a problem to solve, and then a diverse group of people were given a problem to solve, and the diverse group every time solve the problem better than the experts. And so that's just one example of if you actually have a diverse audience and voices in your world, then you're actually probably going to achieve more success. But anyhow, I digress. So my website, again, is just amberleventree.com. And I have listed some of the topics I speak on, kind of the basic stuff that people really want to know about. I do different seminars. The one is literally like, LGBTQ, what do these letters mean? And it's just a 90-minute talk on gender expression, gender versus sexuality. What does it mean to be queer? You know, let's talk about the way these things intersect. Another one is, what does it mean to be transgender? What does it look like in our youth? What does it look like as an adult? What do different types of transitions look like? How can we be respectful to transgender people and how can we support them? And that would also include non-binary people. And then I have a talk on how do we talk to our kids about this stuff, you know, and I dig deeper into, you know, conversations that you have based on different age ranges. And then I have a presentation on how do we make these changes within the classroom and workplaces to be inclusive. And a lot of it has to do, again, with our biases and with the language that we use and just kind of this overall understanding of, you know, identity and how important it is to recognize and see somebody for who they are. So those are kind of like the four basic ones, but I can speak on a lot of different topics. And it can be anything from, you know, teaching little kids to working with teenagers to employers. I'm going to be working with a hospital in the near future to help get their medical staff, faculty and staff up to what they need to be. So when a queer patient walks in, that basically the doctors don't put their foot in their mouth and or do something that will prevent this patient from coming in and get care again in the future. So I'm basically just on a mission to make places as affirming and accepting as possible. And I do that through educating and through speaking and through writing. And my public Facebook page is Family Rhetoric by Amber Leventry. And sorry, Adam, I will not change the name. all my Twitter and my Instagram handles are just at Amber Leventry. And yeah, I welcome all questions, and I'm pretty good at helping people reframe questions. So hopefully it will be respectful if it doesn't feel it to me. But again, I'm very approachable, and I really love having these conversations. I could talk about this stuff all day long. But yeah, so that's what I do.
Well, I really appreciate you coming on and talking to us, and especially I love for Adam to be able to talk about this stuff, because
my eyes and my mind. I mean, I knew nothing of any of this up until a day or two ago, or even, you know, today, you know, specifically as far as everything that you've just, you know, told us and let us know about and opened us up to. I think it's really fascinating.
Yeah, it's fun too. I mean, like, there's like, so it can be serious and be like, okay, I gotta do this, but at the end of the day, like, it's pretty fucking fun to be queer. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I mean, it's hard sometimes. And like, I'm kind of sick of people telling me I'm in the wrong bathroom.
Right.
But I do. I mean, there's also this really fun and loving and flamboyant side. And there's so many good gay jokes. And it's just like, there's just so much fun around it too. I mean, it really is like Pride Parade. I mean, it, as hard as it can be, I really do love who I am, and I wouldn't change it for anything. And
that's awesome.
I mean, rainbows and unicorns, and I mean, I personally don't like glitter because what a pain in the ass all that is. But it is pretty magical, and I think part of that is the community that I'm part of. And I think any marginalized group, if you can kind of find your people and your support, there's just this extra layer of something magical. And my hope is that all LGBTQ people can find that, because I also know what it's like to be a suicidal closeted teen. And if I can make a kid who is feeling like that now feel better, or help their parents understand them better, then I'm going to do it. So there's two sides to it. And my hope is through education that we're going to get those kids to the rainbows and the unicorns and not feel so dark inside. But thank you for letting me talk. And
yeah,
Adam,
you're
exactly my audience. You're accepting, you want to learn, and now hopefully you'll go and, I don't know, talk to somebody about this stuff and open their minds a little bit too. And we're just going to push in that needle.
That's our community too. So, you know, obviously this is going to reach out to a lot of people who are accepting and understanding.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they're going to check out, you know, all that you have to offer on Facebook and your blog and whatever else it is.
And I think you're inspiring not only just for the LGBT community, but I think to everybody, just to be your more authentic self and to, you know, kind of just like own who you are and be really just excited about it. Right. And I think that's really cool. And I love like all your postings and everything. I love your pictures. I love seeing your, you know, just how excited you are to be rocking a new LGBTQ shirt or whatever it is. It's really fun. And I really appreciate it because, you know, I feel like you kind of can guide me in the direction of this is what I should be saying and the language I should be using. And I'm appreciative of that because we don't live in a community that's quite as accepting and progressive. And so we don't get it a lot of other places. So it's really great because I can go online and see what you're doing and use that in my own life. So thank you.
Thank you. And it's funny. So I have my queer as fuck, it's queer AF, you know, shirt I wear to yoga. And somebody asked me about that. They're like, what do your kids think it says? I'm like, well, they know it says queer AF. I tell them it means as fact. And they're like, that's genius. I'm like, it's true. And so I have my sober AF mug. They're like, my daughter's like, sober AF. Oh, sober as fact. I'm like, uh-huh. It's fact.
That's great. I love it. That's awesome.
So, yeah. I don't censor a lot for my kids, but.
Yeah, no, we don't either.
We definitely don't, except they're not allowed to listen to the podcast, although I will let them listen to this episode. So
yeah, I hope so.
Absolutely. Awesome. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. And you are always welcome to come on Marriage and Martinis. We love to have you back as many times as you want. And I'm sure are 1,000 other conversations we have that would be equally as informative. And I just feel like we hit the tip of the iceberg, but I think hopefully now people will go off and do some research. I know I'm about to go and do more research about intersex because I'm kind of fascinated by that.
And I will say, I'm not the expert on everything, and I can only speak from my experience. So if there's somebody out there listening who I just got it wrong, I will apologize. And also, please know that if you don't know if I got it wrong or not, I maybe did, and that I can only speak from my personal experience.
So well, our listeners know we say every episode, we are not experts. We can only speak through our experience. And I think sometimes that's the best way to get information is through experience. And so we appreciate you, you know, sharing your experience with us. And I hope people will go and check you out. And I think that they will. I think they're going to check out your blog and your, So thank you.
Hey, happy Hanukkah. Happy Hanukkah.
Thank you so much. Our kids, like, were asking for presents at 7:30 this morning. So we didn't actually even make it to evening. So, but you know what? It's awesome. Because they've left us alone all day. They're playing with their new shit. And so, you know, it was a win-win.
Nice. Yeah, my partner is Jewish, so we do the candles and I bake latkes and we do the dreidel and stuff. And they're like, why don't we do presents? I'm like, because you get Santa. So don't be greedy.
Right. There you go. That's right. Don't get greedy. Exactly. All right. Well
thank you guys.
Okay.
Thanks again.
Okay, we'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye. Thanks, Amber. Bye.